don't waste time. Like, just take action on things. Literally ask yourself this, like, you could literally pause this podcast and ask yourself a quick question: what needs to change? And every day you wake up, you have the opportunity to change your life. It doesn't have to be big, but you've got to take some action, because you've got to take responsibility for your own life, because no one else is going to do it for you.
Hello, hello, c'est Loïc Blanchard, le créateur et host du podcast indépendant Les Frappés. Je suis un ancien sportif de haut niveau, aujourd'hui reconverti en sportif aventureux, mais aussi entrepreneur, coach et préparateur mental certifié. Passionné d'outdoor et de défis en tout genre, j'ai voulu créer une communauté autour des valeurs de résilience, de dépassement de soi et de détermination, en vous offrant chaque semaine des conversations inspirantes avec des invités incroyables issus d'univers très variés. J'ai reçu aussi bien des athlètes olympiques que des entrepreneurs à succès, des aventurières professionnelles ou encore des anciens des forces spéciales. Leur point commun, la passion pour leur projet et l'audace de se lancer. Alors fonçons ensemble découvrir mon invité de la semaine. Excellente écoute à vous les frappés. So welcome Brandon on the podcast.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. We'll get it. We'll nail it this time.
Yes, yes. So the background story here is that we start talking and I forget to press recording. So my bad. So as I was saying earlier, I'm really happy, Brandon, that you took the time to be with us today, live from Dubai, to share a bit of your story, your background, and what you're actually doing today. As you know, on the podcast, we talk a lot about, you know, resilience and mindset. So I'm pretty sure there will be exciting stuff that you can share with us. But yeah, without saying too much, maybe we can start with that. You know, what's your story?
Yeah, 100%, man. No, thank you for bringing the time on as well. So it's cool. So yeah, probably from, like, I guess my story kind of started from, I guess you could go all the way back to childhood, could you? But we won't bother. I had a very lovely upbringing. I was raised in like a small town, well, a small village. I think there was like 50 kids in my whole school, which was crazy.
Oh, wow.
So it was I was very much a countryside boy, a little bit of a farmer's boy. Parents have always bred dogs, had horses all the way through my life, even up until now. So I was always horse riding at a young age, and it kind of got to a point where I think I was about 8 or 9 where my parents officially split up. And my mum moved quite close to the river, and she was asked to take over a stable yard there and to run that. So we did that. Me and my sister and her all lived together, just riding, competing, and things like that. And then because we were quite close to the river, my mum was like, I want to get on the water. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. Me being like 11 years old, thinking she's going to go and buy some jet skis and some speedboats. didn't happen like that, sadly. So she came back with 2 really old kayaks. And they were like dusty, sandy, like spider webs. And I was just like, this sucks. Like, as an 11-year-old kid, I was like, this is rubbish. And then honestly, from there, so it turned out the guy a couple of doors down used to be a very competitive kayaker. And he was like, I think he saw us just flapping around on the water. And he was like, oh, I'll teach you to do some things. And generally, that was it. That was it. So from then, he taught me to kind of do the basics. And he was with me for a long time. And then it popped around where I kind of was all right. I was all right. And someone said, oh, you should go like try out for the national team. And I was like, no, wow. That's stupid, right? Like, that's ridiculous. So I think I was 14 at the time. So I was like kayaking on and off and playing rugby up until 11 till 14. And then I turned out I actually made it. I actually made the national squad at 14. So I was like, oh, all right. So what do we do now? And that was kind of it. And then from there, probably one of my biggest insecurities has been, like, I was really bad at school. I'm pretty dyslexic. So like reading and writing, I probably only got good at maybe in the last, if I'm honest, probably the last year, now that my job is technically social media, where I have to write a little bit more. So probably reading and writing up until probably early 20s was always a bit of a tricky one. So I failed school pretty badly. I love school, had good friends and I enjoy sport there, but I failed it pretty badly. So I was traveling competing all throughout my secondary school, so from like 11 till 16 roughly. Went to world championships, European championships, I was a British champion, all this sort of stuff. So I was like, screw it, I don't really need school. Ended up going to college for a bit, dropped out of that. Ended up going to university in America, dropped out of that. So anything academic, I'm not very good at. But yeah, that's kind of like, that was kind of my kayaking background, and that led me into fitness, what I am today, really. I kind of got to like 18 to 20 years old where I love kayaking to this day. I still do and I adore it, but I just lost that spark for it. I just lost that boom. And when I kind of got to 18 with kayaking, I had to start going to the gym because I was competing against big boys now. So as soon as you're 18, that's it. You're in with the big boys and you're with the adults. So I was like, these guys are strong, they're fast, all this sort of stuff. So I was like, right, I better start going to the gym. Didn't have really a monkey's what I was doing. And I ended up being picked up by a supplement company at the time that sponsored me through my kayaking. I went to do a photo shoot for them for their website and all this sort of stuff. And like everyone there was in really good shape, really good shape. And I was like, what do these people do? Like, what do you do? And all of them were like bodybuilders or like, I guess like fitness models, all this sort of stuff. And I was like, so that's a job? Like, that's a job? Like, you actually get paid to do that sort of stuff? And they're obviously personal trainers on the side as well. And I just turned around, I was like, I'm going to do that. Like, you get paid to look good and you get paid to help people and things like that. I'm going to do that. So honestly, I kind of started PTing for a selfish reason because I was falling out of love with kayaking. And I kind of just wanted, like, the only thing I was good at was sport and fitness. So I kind of was like, from a selfish reason, I think not many people say it, but I didn't really care about the coaching side of it back then. I just needed to bring fulfillment into my own life. And that was it. I did the course and the rest was history, really. And ever since then, I've just been chasing this fitness journey and continuously evolving myself and others. And now I'm in a position now where I coach hundreds of people around the world and just continuously trying to progress my own fitness as well. So that's kind of it, really.
Awesome. Great story. Well, I guess the first question for me is, you know, you mentioned this this fire that might not have been burning in the end for kayaking as strongly as in the beginning, but you also said in the beginning that when you saw your mother coming back with those two kayaks that might not have looked like jet skis for you at the time, I didn't have the feeling that you were excited about it. So I'm wondering, you know, when did the flame started to burn for kayaking for you?
I think the actual freedom of it is what I loved. So when you're on the water and you're almost like that typical thing, you're in the elements. Like, there was parts where, like, I went to Uganda, I went to Canada, I went to all these amazing places in the world. And sometimes you just sat there on the water in the middle of nowhere and you're like, this is pretty cool. And I generally enjoyed the community, was amazing. I enjoyed the competitive side of it. And I think it was one of those things, when you start to see results, you enjoy it more. So when you start getting good at something, you like, you love it. And it's a bit like fitness. As soon as you lose the first 5 pounds, you're like, oh, okay, cool. And then when you start to get stronger and you start to feel that bit more muscle, you get addicted to it. And that was it, really. Like, there was no real, I think the flame thing was probably just 8 years later sort of thing. But there's no, like, if someone said get back in a boat now, and I like, if someone go try out for the team again, I'd be like, yeah, 100%, I'll give it a go. Why not? I still love it. I think I just loved fitness and bodybuilding more now. That's all.
All right. Cool. And so, well, you made it to the nationals pretty early. I mean, I don't know, actually, is it early, 14 in this
world? Yeah, I think I was in a weird era. There was quite a few youngsters, like quite a few of us at a young age did pretty good then. And it was quite a high standard, but yeah, I guess I think 14 is quite young for anything, really, any kind of like achievement, like a bit like when you get picked, like footballers, when they get picked at 14 years old, you're going to play for Arsenal and things like that. And you're like, Jesus, like, really? And I think that's kind of it. I think it's one of those sports, like nowadays, like you have to start young with a lot of stuff. Like if you look I know a few dancers that are really high up and things like that, and they start dancing and doing gymnastics and things like that when they're like 6 years old. And I'm like, it's crazy. But then sometimes, like, you see it around kind of the 16 to 18 year old range where, you know, girls, boys drink alcohol and all this sort of stuff starts to kick in and they can kind of just go into a different direction, which is absolutely fine. But who's to say at 6 years old that you're truly passionate and you love this? Because I used to love Action Man when I was 6 years old as well. You know I mean, so it's a hard thing, I think, at a young age to be like, is this your future? And you see it with a lot of professional sports. I think you can look at like anything from NBA players and NFL players. They're at college and then they get drafted to be on a professional team at 21 years old. And you're like, mate, 21, like, to be paid that much, that standard, to be a national icon, like, you don't even know yourself at 21.
Exactly.
So I think kind of that 20 to 30 range is where you do a lot of self-evaluating, a lot of learning about yourself. So
yeah, we talk. That's something we mention a lot with my guests who evolved, you know, in sports at some level. It's this identity thing. Because I'm also coming from a like high level sports background, and so like you, at 14 I was in the national team in judo, you know, in martial art, and basically what I really struggled with, and that's going to be my question for you then, is you know, once I dropped out, the struggle was to answer, okay, who am I now? You know, I've spent the last 5, 6, 8, probably, yeah, when I dropped out, 10 years actually doing mainly that. I think at the age of 15 or 16, I missed like almost 3 months of school because I was, you know, traveling the world for events, competitions, and common like trainings, you know, with other nations.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of commitment. So I'm actually wondering, since you said, you know, that school was not that you were not like exceeding at school, what was the impact for you joining the nationals at 14 in terms of identity and self-confidence?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think at the end of the day, like, school was what I would never regret it, because like I am where I am now because I failed school, right? And things like that. And I don't regret it either. It'd be nice to get some more C's and B's, but at the end of the day, like, no one cares either. If someone wants my CV, I can just make it up as well. No one's going to check those results. But I think the biggest thing at kind of doing anything at that age is, or any age, you get defined by potentially a name or a reputation. And that, or that's what you think you get labeled for. It's like your friends growing up, be like, oh, you're the judo guy, right? And people are like, well, no, I'm actually Brandon, whatever it is. Like, a sport or something doesn't define who you are.
Yeah.
I think when you are in that situation, that is your identity. You live and breathe it. You don't know anything different. You wake up thinking about it. You wake up, go to bed dreaming about it. You eat for it. You drink for it. The reason I'm drinking water right now is because I've got a training tomorrow and things like that. Like, everything you do revolves around what you do on a day-to-day basis. So it is your identity, but it's making sure that it doesn't control who you are, if that makes sense. Mm. So it's like people can be like, oh, you're the fitness guy now, or you're the bodybuilder, or whatever it is now. And I'm like, no, I'm just Brandon, sort of thing. And yeah. I think that's the thing that happens with age, is that you don't have let anything define you but yourself. But growing up, 100%, I think that's the reason I started probably doing fitness more, because my confidence levels and self-belief was, honestly, like, I look back at it now, sheer rock bottom, like, horrible. Because I'm like, well, I lost kayaking. What defines me? No one's going to find me appealing. No one's going to like me because I don't do this anymore. Wasn't happy with like the way that I looked, all this sort of stuff. And the belief that I could actually achieve anything, I just didn't believe. I was like, am I just going to be working this part-time job for the rest of my life because I failed school as well? So confidence is always that big one, no matter what you see from the outside. Oh, he's got it together. No, we don't.
No. That's a super good point. And, you know, it makes me reflect on something that a few of my guests who were Olympic champions in their fields mentioned, is that sometimes, at least a few of them, they even stopped introducing themselves as Olympic champions or medalists, to avoid having this tag, you know, put on their head, like, okay, this guy is whatever sport he's doing and there is nothing else. And I'm going to interact with him with this filter. Like, all the questions they were getting were around, okay, the medals, the sports, the discipline they were doing. But as you said, you know, it's not necessarily 100% of what defines them. So super interesting to see that this is also what you sort of experienced and that you successfully, you know, move forward and try, I mean, found a way to avoid this.
Have you read the book Relentless?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that was, I've only just finished that, to be fair. And it goes on to talk about very similar things, isn't it? It's like, because when you've spoke to Olympic champions and things like that, and when you are an Olympic champion, that is it. You are the pinnacle of your sport, technically. You are the best of the best. So where do you go from there? Like, what's next? And I think what was lovely about that book is that actually it's not so much, and it's like anything, like we could all desire to be a millionaire or a billionaire, but actually the process of becoming a millionaire, a billionaire or Olympic athlete is what the desire is. That's the fun part, that the suffering, the learning and things like that. When you get given a medal around your neck and some people clap like, oh, well done, you're like, you could feel absolutely the most alone you've ever felt in your life still, depending on how your mindset's going into that.
Yeah.
Or most of the time, most Olympic athletes are probably stood up there thinking, right, I need to get back to training tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, that's literally it. Like, if you actually, like, they'll have a proud moment because it's been 4 to 8 years of hard work. But after that, it's the next day they're back to it because they're like, well, I need the routine, I need the structure, I need this, this is my life. And then I know I've heard loads of Olympic stories where they just don't even like, they don't even care about the medal. They just chuck it into the loft and they crack on with it. Because I'm like, well, a piece of gold doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah. It makes me think of this concept that you probably know as a personal trainer of finite and infinite games, you know, from, I think it's from Simon Sinek, but he's sometimes recycling a lot of concepts. So I don't know if it's really from him, but I discovered it through one of his talk, finite games and infinite games. Yeah. Which is basically that, you know, like, isn't the beauty in actually the pursuit of the goal rather than reaching the goal itself, which is, you know, then what?
Yeah,
honestly. So awesome. Well, you mentioned, you know, you talked about this sort of awakening moment you had when you were on this shooting, day, and you met all those people, and that was sort of the clicking moment for you. I'm just wondering, you know, what happened then? Because when you look backward, you know, it's always easy. You say, oh, okay, yeah, he was at a shooting day. Then he had he realized he wanted to do this in his life, and today he's a successful personal trainer. He lives in Dubai. You know, everything seems, you know, super, that it went super smoothly. But I guess there was a start, you know, there was a first action you decided to do. And then probably there were some struggles on the way. So I'm curious to know, you know, how did you kickstart this new leg of your journey?
I think it's a typical thing. It's just like you just take action, right? On whatever it is. Like, we can all plan and we can all map out, we can get a pen and paper, but I've got a plan in place. So I'm like, yeah, but that's great, but it's not going to do anything until you actually just do it. So initially I was like, well, what do I need to do to become a PT? Because I don't know how you do that, right? Again, it's pretty simple, which is a bit sad. To get basic for qualifications, you don't need to do much. Bit like a driving test, of course. Like, yeah, you can do a driving test, but it doesn't mean you can drive. Like, now you've got to go on the road and actually learn, sort of thing. So obviously from that point, I just signed up to do my level 3 personal training thing, which took literally, I think it was 6 weeks in, like, every day, 9 till 5, Monday to Friday. So it was really easy. Like, it was really straightforward. And I was just working part-time at, like, Hollister. So I was working part-time there for kind of 2 years on and off. And then ever since then, I was like, right. And then when that finished, I started working at a Pure Gym, which was kind of a local gym. And I spent 2 years there just, like, doing the typical PT thing, talking to people, teaching classes, all this sort of stuff, doing the 4 a.m. shift, doing all the way up through 10 p.m., the horrible PT hours. And I did that for 2 years. And then I transferred and I moved to London. And that was literally it. So it just comes down to, I'm just like, just got to start. You just got to start. Like, Google it. Like, simplest way. How do I? And that's literally it. Like, type in, how do I become a personal trainer? Loads of courses pop up. Find one near you. Go do it. But yeah, that was, I think what I find with my life is that I probably should think about things a little bit more than I actually do. I'm very much, I just listen to my gut and I go for it. The same as moving my life out to the Middle East, which same sort of thing. I was like, yeah, screw it. Like, what have I got to lose? Nothing. Let's go. Again, probably should have thought about it, but it's, I think if you listen to your gut and just take action, you'll do all right.
Awesome. Wow. Is this something you also see in your, with your clients, you know, the ones who are really committed to actually achieve results? What would you say is the key factor of success for them? Would that be that, the ability to step into actions?
I think it's actually, I mean, it's very easy to turn around and be like, oh, you got to want it. That's very easy to say. Some people need more guidance. Some people need more support and clarity and things like that. But it all comes down to just putting in the action blocks that's needed. And it doesn't have to be rocket science. Like, I preach moving 1% forward every day. So I'm like, right, what do you need to do today in order to be a little bit better tomorrow? And vice versa. Just think about one step today. Could be like, again, like I'm drinking water now. Could be like, make sure you drink 2 liters of water a day. Guess what? You're a healthier individual right now. And I think that's all it is just breaking it down step by step. But a lot of it comes down to, like, it's that typical thing. You can't sugarcoat it either. Like, it comes down to adhering to a plan. It comes down to executing. It comes down to showing up when you don't want to do it. If it's raining outside, yeah, you've got to go outside and you've got to go for a walk, or like, you don't want to go to the gym at 6 a.m., but like, it needs to be done. So let's go. And I think the biggest thing is, I'm very big on, again, like, you're onto it as well, like a mindset approach. And it does just come down to, like, I always ask myself or ask them questions like, okay, cool. So if we have the same conversation in 6 months' time, and you're in the same position now, how would you feel? And I think that's the biggest fear you can put into someone. Mm. So I'm like, so you're, nothing's going to change in the next 6 months of your life. Really, really simple breakdown. And I've actually got, I've started doing it now, and I've got a few clients to do it. You know, the little timers, like the egg timers you flick upside down?
Yep.
I listened to a really good, another good audiobook. And sometimes I just flick it over and that's my life disappearing. And it's a bit deep, but I like it because I'm like, and you can just see your time disappearing, what you've got left. So I'm like, okay, cool. So how are you going to spend your time? And sometimes you can just have them anywhere. So when you're cooking, just flick it over. And I got a few people to do that, and it hits home quite hard. So there's loads of little things you can do to, like, on a day-to-day routine to kind of produce that mindset or produce the actions that are needed. But at the end of the day, it does come down to it again. Like I said, it's easier saying, oh, you got to want it. But you do have to want it at the same time. It's easy to say, oh, you got to want it. But the most important thing is to home in on the why and the goal. Because I could turn around and be like, oh, bro, like, you getting fitter isn't about you. It's about you in 6 months' time. It's about you being a better father in 6 months' time. It's about you being the athlete that you want to be in 6 months' time, whatever that is. It's not about you now. Stop being selfish now. Think about you in the future. And things like that. So I think that's the biggest thing. Because going to the gym, eating well, everyone knows how to do it. Generally, we have the internet. Google it. Like, honestly, I'm probably going to give you some of the same advice that you can see on Google because it works. But actually, why aren't you adhering to the plan? Why don't you eat well? Why don't you go to the gym? And that's what we need to suss out.
Yeah. Start with why again. Yeah, that's super interesting. And as you know, I think that's something to me with the clients I've coached that really made a difference is the direction. You know, what's the destination? As you say, it's not about, because it makes sense. You know, if you want to lose weight, I guess you can ask pretty much everyone. They will give you a recipe. You know, eat better, eat less. drink better, drink more water, exercise more, sleep well, and that's it. Actually, the recipe, you know, everyone knows it. But when you look at it, we have like thousands and hundreds of thousands of people who every single year are, you know, reaching out to PT or coaches like you and I, asking for, you know, support because they do not manage to stick to, you know, that simple recipe. So, and to me, and I'm pleased that you mentioned it, it's really about the direction. It's that most of the time those people, they stick to the present, as you say, you know, and they don't maybe invest enough time and energy thinking about, okay, why am I doing this? You know, what's the direction? In which way is it going to help me to reach, you know, a certain goal or a certain destination?
Yeah. And a lot of it's, it's all simple. It's all very simple.
Yeah.
So it's like, I always break it down to like brushing your teeth. Brushing your teeth is really easy to do and really easy not to do. It's 2 minutes out of your day. But actually, what will happen if you don't brush your teeth, it'll accumulate over time. If you brush your teeth every day and you have good teeth, it'll accumulate over time. And the out... Cool. You're going to have no teeth. You're going to lose it all, whatever it is. Or you're going to have very good, healthy teeth by just doing a very simple habit every day. And you can do the same. Well, what's the benefit of eating one good meal? Well, there isn't one. But what happens when you eat 60? And what happens when you eat 70 and 80 and 90? The accumulation of everything and the compounding effect is huge. So everyone can take a step back and be like, yeah, you're not going to see results tonight, tomorrow, next week, potentially next month. But if you know what you're doing and you have a clear plan and clarity throughout the way, and you know deep down you're ticking off the boxes, you will get there. So it's making sure that people, like, again, like, I would never, if I started out judo, why would I look at you? You've been a professional for 10 years longer than me. And it's pointless for me to compare my chapter one to your chapter 60. I have to read through the chapters as well.
Yeah. Would you say, I don't know, maybe it's, you know, you sort of hear that everywhere, that today we are in, you know, we are generations of, in the instant, you know, everything is like immediate with the, you know, social media, whatever you name it. It's right now, immediately. Would you say that's something that's making, you know, focuses on health and fitness harder for people, for the younger generations, because of the influence they have through that?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it. We live in a world now where everything looks perfect and almost good looks poor. So like if you're doing really good in life, it almost feels like you're not getting anywhere. And perfect is so easy to portray. Especially when it's like, cool, like I can show you my day and I can make it look fucking incredible. A Dubai view, whatever it is, nice food, whatever it is. But then people don't see the other 95% of the day. And I do think it is just that age. I think it's very easy to sit here, but I think kind of like from 20 to 30 years old nowadays, I think maybe a bit older even, like I think they just assume they're entitlement very much. Like, we live in a world now where we can get anything by our phone, all this sort of stuff. And if we talk to our parents, like my mum worked 3 jobs, raised 3 kids, worked from 4 a.m. till 10 p.m. at night. And people are like, oh, I've worked really hard for a week. I'm like, dude, you're joking, right? Like, and that's kind of comes down to, I think that's one good thing when you talk to athletes. It's like, all you see them do is hold up a medal. And they're like, oh man, he's so talented. Like, he's not talented. He's not special. He's worked for eight years. You haven't seen those 8 years of hard work. So when people see success and things like that, or whatever success is to the individual, well, I actually turn around and be like, well, it's that typical thing, the iceberg thing, right? Where you have to see success underneath the icebergs, hard work, crying, tears, all that sort of stuff. People don't see that. But then also I think potentially if it is social media, you probably need to be unfollowing certain people or following the right people that are very transparent. But it does, I think it is. It's just, we just live in a world where there's nothing bad about it. Like, we would never be having this conversation right now if it wasn't for social media and all this sort of stuff, right? So it has given me my best friends, relationships, everything like that in life. But it is, I think, having this self-awareness to detach from it as well.
Yeah. I was about to say, especially in your field, right? Because as a PT, I mean, you do help people to also, of course, feel better, but also look better, you know, and yeah. I was about to say, you know, isn't it the paradox of your of what you're doing, because you have to be aware of the reality that it might not look like what we see on social media, but on the other side, that's also probably for some of your customers, if not most of, a goal, you know, this physical appearance.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, honestly, if I compared to myself to the people that I look up to sort of thing, I would just be crying every day. There's no point. Like, I'd be like, I can, like, you just, like, it's just, it's not even worth it. Like, sometimes you have to be like, there's a lot of factors that come into play, of course. Like, you have to think about genetics and you have to think about all these sort of things. Again, it comes down to drug protocols and everything like that, what these people are doing to their bodies in order to do that and stuff. And it's, all I say is I've been in very good shape as well. Like, I've been abs, whatever you want to call it, very good shape. And it doesn't make you happy. It doesn't make you fulfilled. So fulfillment and happiness comes down to other areas of your life. Going to the gym is great and things like that. And it is, you just need to home in on, it's about you. It's about your process and about what you want from life. And again, coming back to that original why. Like, why do you want to change your life? Is it to run around with your kids? Is it to be able to take your top off and feel more confident, or whatever it is? And but yet that why evolves over time. You achieve that and then you want more and more and more. So sometimes you need to be like, right, remember the conversation we had 6 months ago? Actually, you've achieved that goal. So why aren't you happy now? Do you know what I mean? So it's like sometimes it's taking a step back, and I think it's great that people evolve like that, but you've just got to sometimes backtrack a little bit and be like, you are doing good. Like, I think it's sometimes the best thing I've done in the last few months is just put my head down and just focus on me and keep my circle extremely small. One of the best things I've ever done.
Super interesting. And how would you say, you know, you mentioned this image of the iceberg with what people see and what most of the time people don't see, especially in sports. How does your former career as a kayaker helps you today to lend that message to your clients?
Yeah, 100%. I think I'm very relatable. So an easy one to do is, like, most people have been to university, right? Or some form of university degree or college or things like that. So I'm like, okay, cool. So you went to university for 3 years to study to be this, right? And you had to hand in so much paperwork. You had to do X, Y, and Z to get something at the end of it. Why is your health and fitness any different? Yeah. It's literally not. So I'm like, actually, instead of thinking, I think, again, we've been sold this kind of like 12-week cookie cutter program, get shredded, get abs in 12 weeks. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course it can work to an extent, but not for 99% of people. So let's take a step back and be like, so you've been technically abusing your body for a good amount of time, potentially 5-10 years. You've been unhealthy. You've potentially felt lacking confidence in your body. So why do you want to turn around and all of a sudden get it in shape in a month's time? And then you can relate it to things again, like university. Like, I work with a couple of doctors and I sometimes get baffled. I'm like, dude, you've studied for 12 years to be a surgeon. And why do you think we can achieve this in 6 months? And again, like, it's kind of that comment that I said with time. I'm like, time is your best friend. Like, people are learning from I was doing rugby at 11 years old and then kayaking all the way through. Like, I'm 26 now, so it's been a long period of time, like over 10 years, like 15 years doing fitness and health and sport. So I'm like, just because I was a kid, like, I generally felt all these things and it didn't, like, I've learned and I failed from 14 years old all the way through. So you're just learning from my failures. And a lot of time I do that now. And I'm like, I know the outcome. So if clients are, oh, I'm going to eat this, I'm going to try this, I'm like, honestly, go for it. I know what's going to happen. It's fine because I've done it. And then when they turn around, like, no, it didn't work. I'm like, yeah, I thought so. But it's good. It's very good for people to fail like that sort of thing. And it's like, if you film some exercise and send them to me and the technique's a little bit off, I'm like, good, they're supposed to be off. Why are you trying to find this perfect technique and form? Like, if you talk to Usain Bolt, he's always going to think, oh, I could have just, he doesn't just run and be like, this is perfect. He's continuously adapting and fine tuning it. And that never stops. So there is, like, again, when people hunt for perfect, I'm like, mate, if you can find me the definition of perfect and the perfect setup, that's awesome, because your perfect is going to be very different from my perfect.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's all like, it's just not real. It's just not real.
Yeah. And so today we started with this, you know, this idea of the flame burning for kayaking that at some point burned probably a bit less. I really have the feeling that today you have this flame for personal training. So I was wondering, you know, what is it that's fueling it? Is it supporting people, seeing where they, you know, what they can achieve, or is it something else?
Yeah, it's really good. Do you know what's fun? I think the more that I'm doing it, impacting lives is amazing. Like I always say to people, like if it's a consultation or whatever that is, I can get people in shape. I can get people healthy into the best shape of their lives. I'm not worried about that. And like, again, it all comes down to mindset for me. Because what you're going to achieve mentally over the next kind of year, 6 months, whatever it is however long we work together, that's going to be more, that's going to impact your life more than getting into good shape. And I love the mindset thing. I love the psychology, the self-development side of what training does, because training and nutrition is a very simple concept. Like we said before, like actually eating well, doing all that sort of stuff very easy, but why don't we do it? And it comes down to the psychological side of this. But honestly, it's going to sound really messed up, but this is probably what most potentially athletes say, is like generally I love trying to fail and suffer every day. Like I do, I enjoy, like the reason I like training is because it hurts. And I know if it hurts, it's the good thing to do. I know, again, if like, it sounds a bit harsh, but if like, if my clients are struggling, I'm like, that's good. Like you should be struggling because it's not easy. And if every day was easy and a breeze, like you wouldn't get anywhere. You have to consider, it doesn't have to be like jumping fully out the comfort zone, but just keep stepping out of it. Just keep trying to like nudge your way out of it all the time. Because I think when you can fall in love with kind of the suffering and the early mornings and the late nights and just the shitty stuff, really, like that's fun. That is fun because that's kind of life. Like 80% of it's hard work and 20% you're like, this is amazing. Again, we can relate it back to the Olympics. 4 years of hell, 8 years of hell, coming fourth, last. Oh, I didn't, like you see those stories all the time of Olympians like never making, like they could do two Olympics and just, again, I've seen it with powerlifting where they drop the bar. They just drop it. And they do it again in the next Olympics 4 years later. And then they hold it up on the next Olympics and that's 4, 8, that's 12 years later. And it'll be amazing for that split second, but the other 8 years before that is what he really loved. Because that split, when he's done it, that split second, emotional tears. And it's almost like the relief, the suffering's over for a split second. And then we start all over again.
Yeah.
So I think I just enjoy that. Again, like we talk about relentless, and I enjoy the relentless side of it.
Would you have a story for us maybe of either yourself or a client that you coached that really for you, you know, represents this, the impact of the mindset?
Yeah, 100%. I can relate it to clients. A lot of the clients I work with now want to get into the best shape of their lives. And I mean to get into photo shoot shape. And every one of them has the same struggles of the, like a lot of it is, it's again, it's very, very simple, but it's the routines and habits every day. They get more and more demanding the deeper you get, right? So you can always, again, pull it back to like Olympics. The closer you get to the Olympics, the demands get higher and things like that. And it's very simple. When a deadline's coming up, you have to push a little bit harder and a little bit harder. And what they learn in themselves in that time period is phenomenal because they know how to eat, they know how to drink, they know how to train. But what I love is just seeing messages from them in voice notes and things like that. And just the consistent, like, the hunt, like I want this every day. I'm not sleeping good, it's bad night's sleep, but I'm showing up at 4 a.m. I'm getting it done, I'm doing it before work, I'm doing it before the kids wake up and all that sort of stuff. That's what I love, and that's what I admire with any individual, whatever they go through in life. It could be a career, it could be anything, but if you're passionate about hunting and hunting, like, you'll get respect from me any day.
It's all about the hunt.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Awesome. Wow. Triggers a lot of thoughts, you know, and I mean, it's funny to see that the different, even though we have different backgrounds, funny to see, you know, that we shared a lot of views, actually, pretty much everything you said. I'm like, I fully agree on the approach on development, the destination, the 1% every single day. By the way, I wanted to ask, this concept of the marginal improvement, wasn't it first brought up by the British cycling team? Do you know that? I talked about it with a previous guest, but I wasn't sure anymore.
I think it is. I think because the English cycling team was really bad, right? For 50 years. Like for 50 years. And I think they brought in, because it was in the book, wasn't it? Like Atomic Habits, right?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
I don't know who they brought in, but they brought in like some team or some psychologist or whatever it was. And they did the smallest of things, right? I think they changed the color of like where their bikes were stored from black to white. And they changed like just their daily routines, wake up 5 minutes earlier and do this and all this sort of stuff. And now like the English cycling team are probably one of the best teams on the planet. But less than I thought, like a lot less time period. It hasn't been that long. It's only been in the last, what, like 5 years, maybe? Like not even long, like the last two Olympics. Because the last one didn't really happen, did it? Or it was delayed. So yeah, I think it was. I think like the... that kind of 1% formula and things like that, and the small changes massively, but it does. Stick and again, it compounds.
Stick
like
to the small changes over time. That's what gonna, you know, trigger the biggest improvements.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we are slowly but surely reaching the end, Brandon. I was wondering if maybe, you know, to conclude, you could maybe share maybe some tips or your view on. For people who would be listening and wondering, okay, it's great to hear about all of that, but you know, what do I start with? You know, what can help me to really, you know, trigger those changes I've been dreaming for, and what is the first action I should be doing? What would be your tips for those people?
Yeah, 100%. There's obviously a lot of things you can talk about, but I generally think just to sit on your sofa and ask yourself the harsh question of like. Like I said to you before, like in 6 months' time, like where do I want to be? And if you don't like the answer, or if you're not happy with the answer, then what needs to change? Very simple concept. So it's like, or if you wake up and you keep waking up, not fulfilled, not happy, things like that, just ask yourself, like, what needs to change in my life?
Mm.
Very simple. And sometimes, like, no one's going to ask you those questions. Or you can just be like, am I happy? It's either yes or no, right? And if you don't like the answer, then I'm cool. Right, what needs to change in order for you to be happy? Because a lot of time people know the answers deep down. People know because we have that gut feeling, and I'm a big believer in the gut. So I'm like, right, what needs to change? Are you unhappy going to work, doing the same job? Right, assess your environment. If you've got kids and things like that, yep, of course, assess your environment. But just quit. Because at the end of the day, like you can find another job. You're clearly very switched on. There's lots of jobs in the world now. Apparently social media is a job now. So there's lots of jobs in the world. But don't waste time. Like just take action on things. Literally ask yourself this. Like you could literally pause this podcast and ask yourself a quick question. And they're like, right, what needs to change? And every day you wake up, you have the opportunity to change your life. Doesn't have to be big. Like we said, we've literally said nothing needs to be big. Like it could just be like, right, let's just eat a little bit healthier today. Let's eat some fruit today. Let's eat some veg. Very, very simple. Drink some more water. But you got to take some action because you've got to take responsibility for your own life because no one else is going to do it for you.
Exactly. So simple yet super powerful questions.
Always.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Brandon, for everything you've been willing to share with us today. It was fantastic to have your view on PT, to learn a bit more about your background as a former high-level athlete. I guess, what can I wish you? All the best in your next endeavors. fantastic success in the field of PT. And well, maybe one day we'll meet each other in Dubai or UK. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll get a workout in soon. It'll be fine.
Yeah, let's do that.
As long as it's not judo, I'm all right. I don't want to get my ass kicked.
Or we do a first round judo and the second one on a kayak, you know.
Then we're even. Kind of mutual out. It's good.
Yeah. No, awesome. Thanks a lot, Brendan.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.